This is a download from BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I am Mira Sivasoli. At the recent BFM Health and Living Live 2017, which is an event we had on April the 8th, we asked many of our participants or attendees if they had any questions for a therapist, and because it was themed mental health. And many of them shared some of the questions with us that day, and we have them for registered and licensed counsellor Faith Fu, who's in the studio with us, and marriage and family therapist Christine Gabriel, who are both going to help us answer some of the questions that you would like, if you're given the situation or given the opportunity to be with a therapist or to go for a counselling session. What would you ask the therapist? So we're opening up the phone lines. If you'd like to ask them, you can also give them a call. It's 03-77-109-000. You can tweet BFM Radio or just WhatsApp us on 016-201-9000. Welcome, both of you. How are you today?
Good.
Thanks. Thank you, Mira.
Thanks for inviting us.
You're most welcome. We've got about 15 questions to go through, so I'm just going to kickstart with the first one. The first attendee had this question to ask.
So what's the difference between a therapist, counselor, psychologist, and a psychiatrist?
Faith?
I would say counselor is more on the talk therapy. We do counseling for helping people to manage their life, to cope. Psychiatrist actually is the medical doctor who will give more describe of medications, you know. Psychologists, basically, they do more on assessment to give you the diagnosis, like what kind of issues you're facing or personality disorders.
Yeah. Okay, what about you, Christine? Would you agree with her?
Yes, so I believe that all of us work under the same umbrella, which is mental health. But what is the main difference is the training background. So the models that we learn mental health from. So like a psychiatrist is a doctor, so they come from a very medical model and they're the only one that can prescribe medication. And the rest of us, it really differs the approach. A therapist and counselors are pretty much interchangeable.
Okay, sometimes. So for me, who doesn't really understand, so who do I go to?
For daily, like if you are facing stress issues in work, you cannot cope, usually your first step, you go to your counselor.
Okay, yeah. So that would be the first yes. person to
and,
see.
And your counselor, if they find that you have need a diagnosis on for you to get what you call an MC and things like that, it's very serious for your company to know, they might refer to you to see a psychiatrist to diagnose you with certain disorder. And if counselor see that the clients actually need medications, we also will refer them to see a psychiatrist. But basically, the first step is common daily issues that people are facing. They see a counselor.
And there are counselors in schools as well, so you can actually start with the counselor. Okay, fantastic. So this is question number two from the audience.
So if I were to visit a therapist for the first time, what can I expect from the first session?
There you go. I think it came up in during the discussions at the event that, you know, you charge. I mean, there's some psychiatrists who charge 300 ringgit for an hour or in an hour and a half. And patients have actually turned around and said, you know, they just pay you to listen to me, you know. Mm-hmm. So, but it's much more that's involved. So
that's
how would you respond to that? What do you expect in the first visit?
Basically, our clients actually will fill up a form, they call it an intake form. They will actually fill up all the information that why they come for counselling, their goal, and what they want to expect. And from there, the first sessions we call it an intake assessment, where the counsellor will take all the information, the background, and at the end, they will give a brief report. Okay, this is how I'm going to work with you, and this is how I see what kind of problem you are facing. So do you agree and you think that you want to work with me? Yeah, basically, that's the first sessions that we come to an agreement.
Okay, would you agree as well?
Yes.
Christine? Okay. So we move on to the third one, third question.
See, I don't have a problem, but could I see a therapist? What would we talk about if we do?
I don't think you have a problem, but just like a screening test to see if there is indeed a problem. I mean, don't you think that you would find something that everybody grapples with anyway?
That's right. Yeah. Basically, yes. It's just like I say, daily issues that we have, like stress in work, in relationship issue, fighting with mom, can't talk to mom, or can't talk to your colleagues, or, you know, just basic life stress factors itself, that's already a lot to talk about.
Mm-hmm. Mm. So you can actually go to a counselor or a therapist and just talk to them?
Right. But I think what's important that as a therapist or counselor, our role is to be clear of the treatment goal. So when clients come in, we need to be very clear about what is it that they're wanting out of this. So we try to tease it out, because if not, it will be an aimless direction.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. And as this person said, I don't know, but I just want to come and see you just mm-hmm. in case. How would you carry out that assessment?
Basically, if that's what the clients want, that means they need somebody to talk to, mm-hmm. right? And then sometimes we just have a fun sessions, you know, and they feel good and they walk out and then they feel happy just by sharing and talking to somebody. I mean, that's what they want, then that's the session will be
about. Okay, all right. Next question on ease.
What would be the immediate thing they can do to ease a person? Like if I come to you and say, I think I have a mental state of health, what would you say immediately to make me feel at ease to take the next step to address the issue without making me feel uncomfortable? I think it's true that a lot of people feel uncomfortable about it because they label you as crazy.
This is the stigma, taboo mm-hmm. that you know, right. yeah. we face every day when it comes to mental health. Your thoughts, Christine?
So most of the time when clients come in, they are already at a state of like stuckness, powerlessness, frustration. So what we do, the most important thing is to normalize that. So normalize meaning to say that this is what we go through, or you know, it's not something just very out of the norm. You know, it's a normal process, and to look for exceptions, like has there been times where you haven't felt like this before? So to let them know like this is not constant, that you there is a way to come out of this. And one of the other things that I also do is to instill hope, right? So, and it's very important that we come across as non-judgmental in the room as a therapist, so everything matters. Mm-hmm. What we say, the choice of words, our body language, because clients are picking up on all these things.
Sure, and we all have our personal bias. That's right. Mm-hmm. Faith, yeah. How do you put that aside when...
I would really love to share my own experience, you know. 15 years ago, I go to my own depressions, and that time I've not yet have my license, I'm not a counsellor yet. Mm-hmm. I went and see a counsellor, and that time, pretty much it's very taboo. It's like, you know, to see a counsellor, it's like, oh my God, it's the last resort that I'm going crazy. So I went, and then I have my counselling session, and my counsellor make it worse that she wanted me to see a psychiatrist for assessment. So I was like really scared, and I was like, oh my God, is my issue that serious? Am I going crazy? Am I having mental health issue? In the psychiatrist's office, I still remember this is what he said to me. He said, Faith, if you have diabetes, if you have a heart issue, would you go to see a doctor? I said, yeah, sure. And then he said, now your mind has some issue and your brain is like, you know, maybe got sick, and then your depression is because of maybe imbalance of chemical imbalance in your mind or your brain, right? So I was like, oh, yeah, that sounds okay now. Then I don't feel that I'm going crazy. It's just like, you know, sometimes there's imbalance of chemical in our brain that causes us to feel depressed and things like that.
Yeah. Okay, so to think of it as any other disease, really.
Exactly.
To be treated. Our next question.
We're asking too much to take responsibility ourselves, but we also need to look at what the environment, how the environment influences our health. So that's very important for me. So,
biopsychosocial is what they always talk about, isn't it, Christine? Mm-hmm. So how does the environment influence?
Right. So as a marriage and family therapist, I am trained to think systemically. So what that means is to look at things in the context of relationships. So everything is happening in relationships. So how, you know, what's the power difference that's happening between you and me right now? How, what I say, what I not say, how is that influenced by the constructs that we're part of? The social constructs like race, gender, sexual orientation, class. So all these things are coming into play, and it affects the kind of questions we ask, the things that we say. So it's constantly affecting us. It affects family dynamics. It affects relationships in general. Right.
But we have more control over the environment, don't you think, Faith?
Yes.
How do we make at least eliminate that as a problem? Sometimes when it's biological, mm-hmm, it's difficult.
That's right.
But things like your environment can be fixed.
Yes. For example, let's say that, you know, environment involve our parents, our partners, our work, right? So how do we balance and how do we not get, for example, stress, right? If it's stress at home, stress at work, and then we have to find space, right, to get ourselves de-stressed. And also, like, you know, how can we improve the relationship at home and in work so that the stress level will be reduced, right? So it's go both way. What is going on around us and how we're going to deal with it.
Yeah. Okay. All right. And the next one?
How to read someone better, you know? Know when they're open to, you know, to ideas, you know, kind of person they are. In that particular mood, are they in a good mood or in a bad
mood? We all wish the same thing.
That's right. So there is a joke that a psychology graduates, that there's an internal joke where they say, when you go and tell people that you're a psychologist, and then they say, so you can read my mind now?
Yeah.
And then usually we say, well, there's nothing there, you know? Right? So, you know, there is an expectation that as a psychology graduate that you're supposed to know these things. You're supposed to be able to read like a magician.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. But basic tips on how to, you know, assess or gauge a person.
I mean, that will come to boil down to our basic counseling skill, mm-hmm, where we notice the person nonverbal, the body language, and also the way the person is at concurrence with what they say. For example, you're telling me that you're very sad, but you're laughing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that itself is speak a lot. Is all that this person is trying to put up so much in front to pretend to be so strong.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. For example, now, I'm scared sitting first time here in BFM, right? So, so did you see that I'm nervous or not? So my behavior or my body language will also kind of sense, you know, give the vibes for the person who sends it, right? So sometimes people who talk to you, they fold their hands.
Yep.
Yeah, they already is not an open posture. Mm-hmm. So they're not so welcoming whatever you're giving them the feedback.
Right, and I think what's important is to be curious, right? So if you're noticing as counselors, we're sort of like detectives. So you're being curious with, okay, what am I seeing here? What am I noticing here? And to ask instead of making assumption that, this person is angry because his or her voice is escalating in the room, you know? Like, so asking what's going on, what's happening. I notice that your voice is getting louder as you talk about this. So, you know, asking those questions, being curious, gives you information.
Okay, I'll give you a secret. My voice goes up one octave and another octave as I become excited or when I'm angry.
Yes, yeah, that's right. Usually that's the way.
And my boss knows it. He would say, your voice is an octave higher.
That's right. Yeah, that's how you read.
That's how I keep myself in check. But anyway, so we're discussing questions that, you know, you may want to pose to a therapist. We've got voices from people who attended our Health and Living Live session on the 8th of April and questions that they would like to ask their therapist. And we have Faith Fu Siu Yun. She's a registered and licensed counsellor, together with Christine Mariana Gabriel, a marriage and family therapist. And they're helping us answer some of these questions. Our phone lines are open. If you want to give us a call, the number is 03-77-109-000. You can tweet BFM Radio or WhatsApp 016-201-9000. Good afternoon and welcome to The Bigger Picture. I am Meera Sivasothi. In our health segment today, we have marriage and family therapist Christine Mariana Gabriel, together with Faith Fu Siu Yuan. She's a registered and licensed counsellor, and we're discussing questions, you know, that you could possibly ask your therapist. I think there's a lot of stigma that surrounds mental health. A lot of us don't want to go forward and see a therapist because we feel, you know, that, you know, we're not crazy or mm-hmm. we're not.
That's
and
right.
We get called all sorts of names, right? But as Faith alluded to just now, if you could just treat it as, you know, if you have a heart problem, you probably go and see a cardiologist. If you have diabetes, you'd probably see a gastroenterologist, you know, that kind of thing. You do the same thing mm-hmm. with your mental health because
that's
it's
right.
just an imbalance of chemicals in the brain, and that can be fixed either through cognitive therapy or whether or not it's pharmacological path that you need to take. It really depends on the problem. But I think the takeaway is really early diagnosis.
That's
or
right.
Come forward early before it actually becomes a really big problem. So we spoke to many of our attendees at the Health and Living Live 2017, and they asked some of these questions. I'm just going to move on to the next one and have Faith and Christine respond to it.
Funnily enough, I did see a therapist like a few days ago, and this question popped up after I had the therapy session. I was wondering, how do people know that they're not doing enough versus they need help from other people? We already know that if we are depressed or sad or stressed, that we need to take it upon ourselves to do something. But when is the line between like, oh, I'm just going to do it by myself, or do I actually need help? So I'm like trying to figure that out.
That's a very interesting question, mm-hmm. Faith.
Okay. I have here, okay, the five signs it's time for someone to seek counseling. If you answer yes to these five questions, that
all
is
five or just a few?
All five.
Okay.
Or maybe three or four or more.
Okay.
Yeah. So number one is when you feel overwhelmed. Okay, there's a prolonged sense of helplessness and sadness. It's a long period, okay? Mm-hmm. Number two, when you have problems that don't seem to get better, despite your efforts and help from friends or family members. Number three, okay, when you find it difficult to concentrate on work assignments or to carry out any other daily activities. Number four, when you struggle to maintain trust and connect with people around you and you feel lonely all the time. Number five is the most important, when you start to develop all this negative behavior, when you have substance abuse, you go for alcohol, drugs, or even anger, being aggressive, or even harming yourself and even having suicidal thoughts. If you answer all five or four or more or three, I mean, by three, you should seek counseling.
Okay. Before that, there's a high chance you could probably address it yourself.
Mm-hmm. Well, it really depends on your functioning. So if you're able to function, if you have coping skills that's helpful, then yes, that's possible. Because there's a lot of people out there who have gone through severe trauma and still don't need counseling because they have mm-hmm. I mean, people are resilient.
Yeah. Right? The most important thing is you have a group of support. If you have group support system around you, I think that really is very helpful.
Helps as well. Okay. We have a question here. Define crazy. Does common sense or behavior, is that necessarily always correct? And someone is insane in our minds because he or she cannot communicate with others or causes harm to the others. I mean, that's very, what this person I think is trying to say is very, we stereotype. Mm-hmm. You know, if you make sense and you know your behavior is great, yeah, you're always correct. But mm-hmm. you know, if you are unable to communicate well, or you know, causing harm, I suppose is an issue. But mm-hmm. if you're unable to communicate, mm-hmm. then there's something probably wrong with you. Is mm-hmm. that right or wrong?
Mm-hmm. So crazy. If you think about it, it has a judgment tone to it,
yep.
right? So you're saying, oh, there's no one who go out and say, oh, I'm crazy and I'm happy about it. You know, unless it's excitement, of course. So the definition of words like crazy or what was it, the other one, Mira?
What is crazy really?
Crazy. So it goes back to what is mental health. What are you struggling with? You know, and if you're having issues, relationship issues with people around you and people are giving you feedback and there's a pattern in it, you know, like you're constantly blaming, you lack accountability, or you're bullying, or you're taking responsibility that's not yours. So those are all signs that, maybe I don't have a very healthy way of being in relationship, you know. So what is the way to be in relationship with people?
Okay. Mm-hmm. Another question here, question for Christine, actually. How do we control our anger issues when we do get angry easily?
All right. So anger is a secondary emotion. So there are certain emotions that are secondary. So they are hiding. They are the first emotions that you show. So the primary emotions could be hurt, could be pain, could be sadness. So anger, depending on the level of anger, there are the the management of it, so taking deep breaths. You know, these are things that you can actually Google and find helpful ways.
Count to 10 and all of
right,
that. Right,
okay. Count to 10, take some space, stay away from the triggers around you. Mm-hmm. Just things that will cause you and aggravate you, you got to reduce that. And then once you're at a more stable place, once it's more manageable, then you seek help. You want to go and find out what's this really about. You know, the thing that caused anger is just a trigger. But there's something underneath that is informing you about this emotion.
But how do we control it? Is it that simple? Especially when you get angry very easily. And some people are more, you know, susceptible to that. Mm-hmm. Does that mean you need to go a step further and that you need anger management counselling?
Usually I will tell my clients that, you know, it depends on your, okay, if the anger take over you, now you're controlled by the anger. Yes, that is really, really serious that you really need help. But sometimes all of us have anger. Anger is to protect us, you know, to protect the people that we love, to have justice, to look at things. If we don't have anger, then we will let people step over us. But we need to know that, is that under control, we controlling anger, or the anger control us. Mm-hmm. Okay. When anger is controlling our life, now we get explosive easily and we cannot even control it. That's the problem.
Okay, so that's when it becomes an
issue. That's right.
Okay. We have Winnie the Pooh on the line. That's okay. Go ahead with your question. Hello?
Hello?
Yes, go ahead with your question.
I have a question for Ms. Gabriel, yeah?
Yes.
Okay, how do I convince my partner, if I know there's an issue with our marriage, how do I convince my partner to go for therapy?
Okay, can you repeat that again, please?
How do I convince my partner to go for therapy?
Okay, sure. Thank you very much. Bye-bye. Okay, there you go. Very challenging indeed, isn't it?
Yes, very, very. Yeah. So usually this is, yeah, we got this question a lot of times from clients, especially one partner want to be in the relationship and one partner want to be out. Okay, number one, if the relationship is very, very, in a very stressful manner and one partner is not willing to come in at the moment, the other partner is suffering. So I will always say that even though your partner is not willing to come in, you need to come in and talk about it, and that will help you manage or even further improve your relationship. Then your partner, when seeing you change and better whatever way, your partner will say that, hey, okay, now let's go, and then I'm willing to go with you because I see changes in you.
So it is okay to go for counseling alone? Christine?
Yes, of course. We have to remember that you don't have control over the other person. You just don't. So you can always invite, or you could just demonstrate the changes that you are making from, you know, going to counseling. And maybe your partner will start recognizing, like, wow, I do see significant changes in you and it's different. And that is a form of invitation in itself. And that could be a form of convincing.
Could be.
Yes,
could be. All right. If really partner refuses, what do you do then?
Again,
because you're responding based on there's a chance the partner will come eventually, right? Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So if the partner is refusing, then the question goes back to you, is this something that you want, is this the person that you want to live with, right? So what do you want, you know, if can you tolerate this, are you okay living with this, because then it's a choice that you're making to live with the consequences that come with it.
Okay, all right then. Next question from our audience at Health and Living.
How do you cope with the things that don't make you happy? Yeah, ask the therapist that.
Okay. How do you cope with that?
Number one is, okay, is define how, what is happiness means to you, right? We cannot be happy all the time. Life have to be ups and downs, right? A lot of times when we are grateful with the things around us, we, instead of focusing on worries and problems, we focus being grateful with things around us. That itself will already add in a lot of gratefulness and feeling happy and contented and be at peace with ourselves rather than struggles and be angry with the unfairness, things that's going around us. Right, okay. So looking at things very differently, that itself will give us peace and some joy instead of focusing on worries and other things.
How do you cope with things that don't make you happy? Is that what it says?
How do you cope?
Oh, me as a therapist? Mm-hmm. Well, I think first of all, it's just accepting that emotions are emotions, right? So I don't always have to be happy. I don't have to always expect myself to be happy. And being okay with feeling sad sometimes and being okay with feeling angry sometimes is just how I take care of myself in those moments. So I don't put expectation on myself to constantly be happy and put a smiley face all the time.
Okay. We had a question on happy.
Why do I not feel as happy as I think I should be feeling?
Can we ever confidently say, you know what, I'm happy?
Yes, at times. At times.
At times.
Yes.
Yeah, but not all the times. Yep. Not 24/7, no way.
Why not, right? We can surely work towards that.
Usually I will draw this graph for my clients to see, right? You see, our heartbeats go ups and down. That's mean that a person is healthy, right? Mm. If the heartbeat go flat, that mean we are dead. If the heartbeat shoot up, we are having a heart attack. There's no way that life will not have times that we have joy and then we have sad, and then it just go up and down, and that's life. And that's make us alive, right?
Okay. Next question on coping mechanisms.
How do you cope with the things that don't make you happy? Ask the therapist that.
I asked you that already, yes. Right? Okay, let's talk about conflict.
How do I not get into conflict with another person? Because sometimes I think it's me. The problem is me. I'm not really that in tune with other person. Sometimes they can get offended, but I didn't know what I just did.
Okay, sounds like me. Yes, very direct. Sometimes come across as very tactless, but that's how we are, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, and then that does bring about some conflict.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess this is the what you call the soft skill of learning how to communicate, because sometimes it's not what. It's not what we say, it's how we say,
mm-hmm.
right? It's like, for example, just a thank you itself, you can be say, thank you, or hey, thanks, right? Or no effect, thanks. You know, just a simple word, thank you, that itself really is it can bring so much meaning of creating a good communication skill. It's not what we say, it's really how we say it, right?
Okay. So, but there's no such thing as avoiding conflict, really. It's human nature,
right,
isn't it? This is an interesting one.
Why is it so hard to talk to my parents?
I think we all went through that
at some
stage.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Just wait till you grow older and it'll get better.
That's right, yes.
But, you know, in some instances, it is a problem.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Right, especially in teenage years and all of that. Mm-hmm. So when does one come and seek counselling?
Mm-hmm. I think I will speak by my own experience. Like, you know, I for myself, I find it hard to talk to my parents because the way we grew up, we don't talk about sensitive issues. And then it's like, you know, culture. My parents don't accept a lot of things that is because they are non-educated. And so it's very hard. So there are things that I don't really share with them and I don't talk about. And then for my mom, if I share with her serious stuff, she's get very panicky and then she get upset and then she will really, really bug me to eat this, take that, whatever. So sometimes in that manner, I tend not to tell her because I want to protect her. I don't want her to get worried.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So sometimes it's out of good intentions. Yeah. Sometimes it's we are afraid or what is the response. So I could understand for my clients, a lot of times they are afraid to talk to the parents because they find that the parents are judging them, blaming them for their problem. Yeah.
Christine?
Right. I think one of the biggest factors is lack of safety, so emotional safety. So in order to talk to someone openly, you need to know that you're not going to be shut down or judged. And things like that happen a lot with parents, especially, you know, in our culture, parents always have this thing like, I'm the parent and I know better, you know, and you should listen to me. So it makes it difficult. That's what makes it difficult because there's possibility no openness, encouragement or things that you might want to hear.
Yeah.
And there are consequences that come with it,
yeah.
Right? So punishment or parents, you know, if it's a teenager, so, you know, you know, not having your pocket money or things like that. You know, you are at a sort of losing end if you upset your parents, for example.
Okay.
What was your most interesting client?
What was your most interesting
client? So when I hear that question, to me, interesting means challenging. Mm-hmm. So, and the population that is the most challenging is polyamory clients. So what that means is the belief that you can be in love with more than one person at the same time, or having a relationship, a romantic relationship, more than one person at the same time. So it really helped me to see the world from a different view. And because, you know, what is normal to me is a monogamous relationship, you know, having one person for, you know, sharing
the rest
one
of your
person.
Life.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Right. So that is interesting. And mm-hmm. I'm constantly learning from my clients mm-hmm. who are polyamorous, and the things that they're teaching me. It challenges me, but also, you know, it's a learning curve, definitely.
Mm-hmm. Are you seeing more cases of polyamory?
Yes, I am. I am, I have, and I am.
Is it real?
Yes. You mean
as in polyamory, is it real?
Real as in, is it happy?
Is it possible?
Yes, maybe. I think there are research being done on it, books being written on it, rules, you know, they're coming up with their own set of culture. You know, what works, what doesn't work. How do you have conversation around it? How do you have boundaries? So all these are things that my clients are teaching me about.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Mm-hmm. Faith, what about you?
Me? Okay. This is the saying I always tell my colleagues. So, you know, one of the side effects being a therapist or a counselor is you don't want to watch drama anymore. Because I say all my clients that come in, is they're so interesting. All their story is really, you know, right unfolding in front of me. And all of their story is so different. They're so amazing. So seriously, I don't watch family drama anymore. Because they are more
alive.
Real. Yes. And then some of the story is like, oh my gosh, I have not watched this in TV at all. You know, it's so much... Yes.
You sure? I mean, did you not watch Dynasty in Dallas when you were growing up?
Yeah. You were nothing compared to
oh, really?
Nothing compared to the client sitting in front of me. Seriously. Okay. Trust
right.
me.
Yeah. All right. Then, of course, there's this question of...
What kind of tool do you use to help your clients?
Oh.
To me, I think the most important tool that I bring into the room is myself. So my ability to stay present, to listen, to empathize, of course, to reflect back. So all these are tools that are unseen, you know. Then it's very much, and I think it really depends on how much work I've done on myself, going through my struggles, my issues, being in touch with my own pain, my own family issues. So this is one of the greatest tools that we bring. And that's why you can have many therapists learn about CBT or EMDR or many different types of approaches, but everyone administer them differently. Mm-hmm. That's because of who they are and how they, you know, the language that they choose and all that. So that's one thing, one of the tools. The other thing is just creating a trusting relationship and constantly learning about like coping skills, things that you know, like management of anger, like you mentioned earlier. So giving clients, like, you know, like self-harm, for example, one of the reason why self-harm happens is because the emotional pain within is so intense that cutting is a form of release, you know. It sort of relieves that pain. So instead of doing that, maybe you could hold ice, you know, just hold them and give the same sensation to yourself. So these are some of the tools, like learning this, knowing this, helping your clients have some skills and other ways to cope outside of here.
Mm-hmm. What about you, Faith?
Yeah, I totally agree with what Christine said. It's the self, the therapies right in front of the clients that is the biggest, the number one tool. And it's also research have said that one of the common factors of success counseling is the relationship between the clients mm-hmm. and the counselor. I find that if I have a good relationship with my clients, you know, two clients, one, I have a very good relationship, I tell him to do A, right? And then the other clients, I did not build the good relationship, I tell him to do the same things. It works for A, but it's not work for B.
Right.
because basically it's about the trust.
Okay.
Once they trust, they really believe and they will just do what I say. But the other one who don't trust me at all, even the best solution I gave, there's nothing work.
Okay, yeah. Fantastic. So just a parting message from you, Christine, on what we should be asking our therapists. And just as a therapist, would you have a message for everyone?
I think the most important thing that I want people to know is that it's okay to seek help. You know, reach out, seek help. You know, Faith and I, you know, we're available if you have any questions anytime outside of this time to just ask, you know, reach out, help. You don't have to go through whatever you're going through alone.
Yep.
Right. So that's the main thing.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And what about you, Faith?
I will say we are the same. Clients, therapies, we are all human beings. I went through my own issues. Yeah. So I need another therapist also. So we are all humans. Just think about the song. I'm only human.
Yes.
Thank you both very much for joining me today.
Thank you, Mira.
Faith Fu, a registered and licensed counsellor, together with Christine, Mariana, Greg, Gabriel, marriage and family therapist, discussing questions for your therapist on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.